Thanks for continuing on with us. This is, of course, Niaga Wani. I'm taking over from my colleagues earlier on. And as we deep dive into the whole conversation of how things are this week, we also want to take a look into the types of things that can actually help companies do better in ESG. And because of this, Astro Wani is proud to present a collaborative journey with The Edge, largely because The Edge has just recently concluded their ESG Awards 2022. Here to tell us more about this is Tan Jayun, or Nat, the ESG section editor for The Edge. So Nat, I want to learn more about who won and who lost in terms of the ESG Awards for this year.
Yeah, so for the ESG Awards this year, we have around 65 awards that were given out, gold and silver winners. For around
No bronze,
unfortunately. 44 companies won this for both equities and funds. Under equities, we had like 5 huge categories, and funds, we had like 6 huge categories.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so let's go through some of the highlights. I mean, I don't want you to regurgitate the 40-plus corporates, but what would be the highlights of the winners, and why did they win?
Yeah, so for under equities, we have one of a one-time award for this time because it's our inaugural award, and we have a long-term achiever for a company that has been on FTSE for good for the longest. Mm. And so the company that won is actually Sunway Berhad, and you know, they have been, from what I understand, talking to them and reading their materials, they have been really internalizing ESG, especially in terms of SDGs. And
this is the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Go on.
Sustainable Development Goals. And so they have been using ESG as a method to help them achieve their SDG goals. Mm. And they've been doing this for a long time. So, they won the Long-Term Achiever Award. Mm. So it should be noted that the Equity Awards is judged based on the FTSE ESG rating methodology. So it's not us subjectively picking the winners.
Yeah.
So then we also have winners by sector, multiple sectors, and also by most improved performance over 3 years, by market cap, and most consistent performers. So our most consistent performer over 5 years, so this is by their ESG score CAGR, the Gold Award went to Westports. Westports Holdings Berhad, and they're actually one of the companies that, you know, other than their usual sustainability report, they do have a climate risk assessment report as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting.
It's not mandatory.
Yeah, it's not mandatory.
But
yeah.
So they took it upon themselves to do it.
Yeah.
Sorry, before we go down the list even further, why would companies like Westport do above and beyond, say, for instance, companies within their class or industry?
I've never asked them that question before, but I would assume it's because their assets are located in Klang, if I'm wrong. So, they will be at high risk. Yeah.
Risk, actually, if you think about it.
But they also won the Gold Award for the transport and logistics sector. Mm. Yeah, so they have 2 awards for this ESG awards. Yep.
Okay. Other companies in other sectors?
Other companies in other sectors. We also have for technology, we have Malaysian Pacific Industries Berhad. Mm. And so they won gold for technology. They also won gold for one of the top 3 performers in ASEAN. We identified 3 companies in Malaysia that have the higher scores among all the ASEAN companies that have a FTSE ESG score. Mm-hmm. And so MPI, Malaysian Pacific Industries, is one of them, along with Fraser and Neef, so FNN, who's also the Gold Award winner for the full name of the sector is Consumer Products and Services. And also we have Burmas Auto Berhad.
Yeah. One thing that we need to also understand is that some sectors are excluded. We would understand that to be, you know, the logical sense to exclude them. Say, for instance, companies that are embroiled in controversies, companies in tobacco, in weapons, and many more. But why would companies like FNN be not excluded, considering that, you know, they do involve a lot of sugary items in their products? How do you differentiate companies that is included and excluded when, you know, we talk about, say, for instance, non-communicable diseases? Malaysia, diabetes is one of the highest in terms of per capita GDP. What would be some of the considerations there, Nat?
Mm, so the exclusion list is again based on FTSE's exclusion list, and so the things like coal, weapons, and all those are based on what they've already excluded.
Yeah.
As for like why companies like FNN Holdings, that would be your personal opinion in the sense of that. Like, you know, I think it could be subjective whether we say how much sugar is too much sugar. I think it's the same case as we can see in other FMCG companies as well.
Mm.
they have reduced the sugar levels in their food, or they have set a certain sugar level in their food that is legal and aligned with what, let's say, the government says. Mm. So in that sense, can you still say that
they yeah. are? Right. I mean, if they comply, they comply.
Yeah. So, okay. yeah.
Right. Okay. What about financial sector? Something that I'm always a bit more keen about.
So the gold winner for the financial services sector is Hong Leong Bank Berhad, and the silver winner is CIMB Group Berhad.
Why would financial sectors think about ESG a lot more? Is it more of the social element of it, not so much environment or governance?
Actually, it's both. It's all of them, actually. But I think financial institutions are under a lot of pressure to do well on ESG because of the regulators and their investors. Mm. And I think that's because banks have a huge influence over the industry through their lending portfolio. Mm. Yeah, and they have been doing a lot on the E and S, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's with the E part? Like what, cloud services?
No, so for example, a lot of banks have set goals that they will not finance any new coal plants, for example.
Okay. Or they have, sorry about that. Okay.
No worries. And they have transition finance plans for companies, financing companies in cement, steel. So all the high emission industries, as to like how are banks going to help these companies transition? Yeah. So for S, it would be things like, they have a few banks actually, they already have their human rights policy and certain policies that will guide them in who they lend to.
Okay. There's also an award of Best Newcomer. Mm-hmm. So who's the best newcomer right now?
Best newcomer is Mr. DIY. Yeah, so, well, they had a successful listing just like two years ago, right? And so from reading through the materials and talking to them, they do seem very eager to join on an ESG reporting journey. And since they only started sustainability reporting like not too long ago, they have been making quite some strides in trying to get into this ESG.
One thing that I want to learn more is that how has this award been received by the market? And how are investors taking a look into these kind of awards? Do they think a lot more about ESG, and these kind of awards actually play into their considerations in terms of how they want to invest in these kind of companies?
I can't answer for investors, I don't know yet. Mm. But in terms of the company's responses, I can say that there have been a lot of questions. I think a lot of people are very curious, and they're all asking like, oh, you know, how do I qualify for the awards? How is the awards judged? And so, of course, we have to explain that you don't qualify for the awards. Any company on FBM or MAS is automatically included in the eligibility universe because they have an ESG score.
Okay.
And then from there, we have to explain to them that you are not picked. This is not a subjective score. This is not a subjective judging. It's based on their ESG score. So from that process, I think we got a lot of interests and queries about, oh, what is FTSE for good? What is ESG rating methodology?
Yeah. Okay, and because of this, so there's no way to enter the competition, so-called, to speak.
No. Huh?
But it is also trying to inspire companies to do better in this sense. One area that I want to look at is, of course, how you have been covering ESG through the ESG section inside the Edge. It's a news pullout. It's also a new area for concern of the Edge. It's one of the most, if not the most renowned public business publication in the country. How do you see the developments of ESG so far? Do you feel that markets are a little bit more interested, or this is it's not a trend, it's going to stay? Where is the projection when it comes to ESG practices in this country, and how do you report it?
I think it's going to stay in Malaysia for sure. It's very much, I think it's a push factor now, like regulators, the JC3 are looking into it a lot, mm-hmm. and foreign investors as well, institutional investors. Mm-hmm. So the ESG conversation is here to stay, and I think it's right now it's a more of a push factor in that companies are like, and fund managers are like, I really have to look for this. So right now it's that. But I foresee that in the future, the pull factor will come in as well, in that companies will see that if I do well in ESG, more markets will be open to me. So for example, like Apple is trying to be net zero and they are really scrutinizing their supply chain for ESG practices. So companies that do well in ESG could then have a higher chance of being included in the supply chain of a company like Apple. So I think these pull factors will come on quite soon.
All right. JC3 is, of course, the Joint Committee on Climate Change, for those who might not be clued in just yet. Okay. As a journalist, there's a high level of skepticism that needs to be applied in doing your work. Do you feel that some companies are doing lip service? How do you tell them apart versus companies that actually want to do good and is permeating from within, either top down or across the organization or many more?
Yeah, for sure. Greenwashing is a big thing. I think a very basic thing that investors or even consumers can start.
This is called PAS. But yes, go on.
Like a very basic thing that everyone can start doing is actually reading the sustainability reports, which all public listed companies in Malaysia are required to do anyway. So, you know, look into the sustainability reports. What are the targets that they set, for example, for greenhouse gas emissions or their climate targets? Let's say if they have a net zero goal. Well, look at how is the company planning to achieve the net zero goal. If there's nothing there, then you know, you have to question a company, like, you have a net zero goal, how are you going to achieve it? If the company is planning to rely purely on carbon offsets, I think that's a red flag, right? Because the thing is, you should start by reducing your emissions before you even start relying on carbon offsets. And if the company doesn't even provide any data on their baseline numbers for carbon emissions, I think that's also a red flag, because how do you know what you need to do if you don't know where you are right now? So that's for E. And then for S as well, you have to look into what kind of policies that the company has. Is the company just doing CSR? If are they just putting all their CSR activities in the sustainability report and calling it their S, wonderful S?
Yeah.
It's true that CSR is considered part of, most probably under S, because it's community outreach, it's employee engagement, but there needs to be more than that, right? Yeah.
I mean, so is ESG seen by companies as CSR on steroids then?
I think there is some kind of misunderstanding about ESG and CSR at this point. I wouldn't fault them in that they are intent.
Let's widen the scope as well in terms of what are the other misconceptions about ESG. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so CSR and ESG, I think, is definitely one. Like, people get confused, like, what is ESG all about CSR? That is not true, because, like, if you look at ESG, actually G, I think, is the most obvious one. G requires things like independence of board, you know, gender diversity in the board is at 30% female. That's the Malaysian standard. You know, so that's not CSR. And under S, you know, whether you look at if you have foreign workers or workers, you know, do you have a human rights policy? Do you have a grievance channel where your workers can express any grievances that they have, you know, things like that. That's not CSR. These are policies. These are things that you have to change in your business operations, and that is ESG.
Okay, one final area that I want to explore is the companies that you cover or the companies that your team covers inside the ESG section. That you find it, you know, number one, promising. Number two, they had, you know, they were somehow or other had a lot of areas to actually grow. You're kind of supporting these kind of companies, but did not make it to the winners list. Do you have any such companies?
I don't have any off the top of my head, actually, but like some of the companies on this list, and I have to talk about the funds as well.
Funds are important. Got it.
I've covered them, and you know, some of them I have read through their reports, I have spoken to them, and I, you know, it's not a surprise that they won. You know, like, they, some of them, like for example, Yinsen, you can take a look at their reports, and they align with the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures quite early on. They set through a transition plan, and because they're in a hard-to-abate industry, they're in they provide services to oil and gas companies.
Yeah.
Right? So to see them take this step forward is quite interesting.
For companies that aspire to do more, especially one thing that we must not forget is that the classification on market cap is also important before you jump into the funds as well. But for smaller cap companies, what must they do in order to bake in good ESG practices in order for them to grow their company while at the same time ensuring that the ESG practices is permeated within the organization, is baked in within the system of the organization?
Having a good leadership is one, and then looking at what they're already doing well right now and what are the gaps, I think that's very important. But I think the first step actually is just getting the baselines, so the data on where are we right now. So under E, it could be, oh, how much are we recycling? That's already one, right? And greenhouse gas emissions, of course. Yeah. And then under S, like, what are the policies that we have? I think having that baseline measure and being transparent about it, disclosing it in their report, I think that's already a really great big step for smaller companies.
And of course, funds.
Yeah.
They're nice people. let's talk about them now, because for those who might not be familiar, the Aegis ESG Awards 2022 has two kind of broad categories, one for equities and one for funds. And we've been talking about equities for quite a bit. Let's talk about funds. Who are the winners within the funds category?
Yeah, so the best overall winner for under the funds category, the Gold Award, actually goes to BIMB. So we actually award them to
BIMB,
their funds.
BIMB as in Bank Islam Malaysia Berhad?
Yes. Okay. So their fund, BIMB Arabesque Global Sharia ESG AI Tech, is the fund that won. And they actually won multiple awards, BIMB. And interestingly, they are also one of the first few companies in Malaysia, asset management companies in Malaysia, to come up with ESG funds for retail investors. Yeah, which is very, very interesting and very good. And this is something I think more investors should pay attention to, because investors have the power to this to influence what companies do.
I agree.
And as an investor, if you support unit trusts or funds that invest in,
we've seen this from from activist investors.
Exactly.
And why shouldn't retail investors be activists themselves too?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think that these things are going to help perpetuate this kind of behavior, or at least propagate this behavior to be permeated across all retail investors or most retail investors?
I think it will increase the demand for ESG funds, because right now most investors in Malaysia, of course, look for financial returns first. But I think if you take a longer term lens, investing in ESG funds will help you mitigate a lot of this future risk that are coming.
That's the point. Mm. Because yes, I want to maximize the returns on my investment, but at the same time, I also want to reduce the risks of these companies from going, bust because of poor practices or malpractices, right? So it works hand in hand.
Yeah.
So do you think that these kind of funds are going to help further change investor behavior? Funds like BIMB, for instance.
I think so too. So, something I often hear from asset management firms is that the demand for ESG funds is still not really high in Malaysia. Mm. It's mostly among high net worth individuals, institutional investors. Mm. And so, there has to be a demand in order for them to bring in more of such funds. And I think retail investors should begin considering this and, protecting themselves from future risk potentially by maybe diversifying into some ESG funds and showing these fund houses that there is a demand for this kind of funds.
A particular asset management CEO that has come on my show argues that the framework to grow ESG practices or best practices is already baked inside our existing structure. It's called the Sharia structure. Mm. We have the Islamic Financial Services Act, many more. There is an idea that we can emulate. Do you agree with this kind of view, where Sharia is already there, ESG is very much overlapping some areas in a lot of areas? Why don't we just bake it into a framework and then just publish it into an act or something like that?
I definitely think our strength in Sharia is a plus point for us.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. It might not be a copy paste kind of work.
Yeah. Because I've also heard people say that, and I think it's quite true that the fact that we can push Sharia investing into such a level within a short time, shows that we can also do that for ESG funds, because we have that experience. So I think, that's a potential that should be explored.
Okay, fantastic. There's a lot more that needs to be covered. We're going to be talking to Nat on my show Notepad quite soon, because again, there are a lot of philosophical issues that needs to be addressed that we can't cover in this particular show. But for now, that was our conversation with Nat Tan of The Edge. If people want to learn more about this particular conversation, what would be the resources that they have right now? Is it like The Edge ESG section or what?
Yeah, so we are a monthly pullout within The Edge Weekly, published every third week of the month. We also have a website that you can find on our theedgemarkets.com. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And over here in Astro, we are also a strong supporter of ESG practices, and Astro Awani is proud to be a partner with The Edge in promoting ESG best practices, and of course we're proud to be a partner or collaborator in The Edge's ESG Awards. So do check out all on our platforms the ESG resources that you can get your hands on. Also, do share with us your ideas in terms of what we can do better in terms of providing better coverage. I guess the suggestions could work for you as well. In terms of how best we can cover these kind of news in order for us to bring the best out of ESG best practices out there to the market. My name is Ibrahim Sani. I wish you all the best and enjoy your weekend.